from WJCT in Jacksonville. This is our weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. I'm your host, Michelle Corum, and this is Redux. For the week of July 28th on this Redux, a huge state education law is creating headaches for Duval County's worn-out school buildings.
We have so many windows that have settled over time and they just don't close properly.
Yet over in La Villa, new tenants and renovations are coming to a former African-American hospital.
The building is listed on the National Register and it plays an important role in our city story and in our nation's story.
Plus, navigating a tangle of rules when you're trying to stand up a small business. You'll learn in our business brief that help is on its way. For the last week of July, this is Redux. A massive state education law went into effect this month, and it's going to speed up closures of low-performing schools and make way for charter schools to open nearby. But there is a consequence of this law that has largely flown under the radar. Lindsay Kilbride explains it's going to make the maintenance woes of Duval County schools even worse.
Local property tax revenue pays for the bulk of school building projects. Now districts must share that money with charter schools. Duval County is already taxing the maximum allowed under a state cap, but it still has a backlog of projects totaling nearly $130 million. Andrew Jackson Senior High Assistant Principal Mike Townsend says he's compiled a spreadsheet of a couple hundred fixes needed at his school alone.
And what sorts of projects do you notice the district can't immediately get to?
The roof issues and windows. We have so many windows that have settled over time and they just don't close properly. And then of course the roof, I can imagine how many times it's been redone or needed to have been redone.
Inside a social studies class, he points out a crack in the tile, a window that won't completely close, and a water stain up on the ceiling.
And it's not just the fact that it destroys the tile, but it also creates mold issues as well.
So. Townsend says not every classroom in the school just north of downtown is this bad, but most have at least small issues, understandable for a nearly 90-year-old building. District Head of Operations Don Nelson says Duval's average school age is 56.
Our biggest critical need is windows, roofing, and air conditioning.
Duval expects the local tax will bring in about $92 million for maintenance and technology during the upcoming school year, but a third of it is earmarked to pay down debt.
It got quiet.
Nelson is sitting in an Andrew Jackson computer lab as a thunderstorm rages outside. He says it's likely nearly $2.5 million of the tax revenue will now have to go to charter schools pending final clarification from the state.
So just give you, for instance, we have about a $1.2 million in our air conditioning budget, but our air conditioning needs for this year is about $9 million. And so we're going to spend more money maintaining the systems we have in lieu of replacing systems, very similar to what a homeowner would have to make.
School Board Chair Paula Wright says repairing systems that will continue to break wastes money, but the district often can't afford to pay for outright replacements when it can't even afford to open two new schools that had been planning.
It's aggravating because you know better, but you can't do any better.
As district officials project, the maintenance backlog could grow to almost $500 million in 10 years plus. Wright says Duval can't afford to lose a dime, and general revenue won't be much help because a budget shortfall last year is already causing the district to cut programs.
But the two areas that will not suffer is resources for academics and resources for safety to life measures.
Charter schools are tuition-free and public, but privately managed. And proponents of the new law say they're just another choice for parents and deserve resources. Wright argues they're playing by a different set of rules.
I would agree that any student that's in a building that's funded by public dollars should receive adequate dollars. But on the other end, they should also be held to the same standards.
Charters don't have to adhere to the same building codes as traditional schools. For example, they don't have to have sidewalk coverings, Wright says. She also argues it's not fair to taxpayers that public money would be used to improve a privately owned building, which could then be sold with no profits going back into the public coffers. Duval has 30 charters, so the law is hitting harder than in places like St. John's County, which has fewer than 200 students and three charter schools. Back at Jackson High, despite all of its issues, students will get to eat in a remodeled cafeteria when they come back next month, thanks to a separate state funding program.
Oh, this is cool.
Yes.
Making it more really retro.
The room looks like a hip restaurant with high-top bistro tables. Nelson says the goal is for students not to notice the district funding woes.
It really, we don't look at how old the school is and say, does that make financial sense to invest this much money in a building that is 70 years old? We put it in because it's good for kids.
Many school officials hope the law will be found unconstitutional as other Florida districts are suing. The Duval County School Board is considering whether to join in the legal battle. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
Jacksonville Republican State Representative Jason Fisher, who sponsored that law, is calling for a budget audit of Duval County Public Schools. In a letter he wrote to the State Legislative Auditing Committee chair, he says he's most concerned about the school districts spending more than $20 million over budget last year. Fisher also calls the district's consideration of a lawsuit challenging that new state education law that he sponsored frivolous. Next, the North Florida Land Trust may choose as its new headquarters the historic Brewster Hospital in downtown Jacksonville. Sid Hoskinson describes it.
The two-story brick and gingerbread Victorian in La Villa was built on a lot in the 900 block of West Monroe Street in 1885. According to the records, the structure, which started out as a private residence, was turned into Brewster Hospital and Nursing School at the turn of the century. At the time, it was Jacksonville's only African-American hospital and the first training program in the nation for African-American nurses. The hospital outgrew the old house after about a decade and moved to larger digs. Jacksonville Historical Society President Emily Liska says it went through a string of tenants until 2005, when a developer bought the land and the city moved the building half a block away to its current spot on the corner of West Monroe and Davis Streets.
The building is listed on the National Register and it played an important role in our city story and in our nation's story as the first hospital for blacks in Jacksonville.
North Florida Land Trust President Jim McCarthy says the old Brewster Hospital is perfect for them in terms of price, location, and the message it sends.
We're here. We're real. We're legitimate. We're doing really good things in our community, and not only in terms of the wide open spaces, but historic properties. We were founded in 1999. And here we are in 2017, and we've arrived.
McCarthy says the land trust will spend as much as $300,000 to renovate the city-owned building. He hopes to move in this fall. And while the deal has gotten a thumbs up from the Downtown Investment Authority, final approval rests with the Jacksonville City Council. Sid Hoskinson, WJCT News.
Jacksonville's launching a program to help small business owners. In this week's Business Brief, Modern City's co-founder, Mike Field, tells WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo that help sessions are leading them through what can be a very confusing maze of regulations.
So, Mike, why is this program needed now?
Recently, we've seen this at Bolt City Brewery in Cork and Riverside, where they've been open for a number of years, but they didn't get the proper permitting done, years ago. You may know how to make great beer, but you have no idea what zoning regulations are all about. So it's really difficult to be a small business owner, and the fire inspectors show up all of a sudden and say, why hasn't this building been up to code all these years? So it's designed to give the small business owners the opportunity to get their ducks in the row before they go into trying to open up their business.
So the city's offering this type of program. Is this a departure from the way it's always been done?
Absolutely. Most small business owners will go to the tax collector's office and get their business tax receipt. And that's the extent of how they interact with the city government. They don't know they need the building inspection people to come out. They don't know about having a fire inspection done. So they kind of fly blind. This program kind of helps them understand the paperwork needed so that they can focus on earning a living.
And putting this kind of resources into helping truly small businesses is kind of a change of focus, right?
The city has been really great with induced growth, such as attracting companies like Amazon and Macquarie, which, you know, create great employment centers. What they haven't been focusing on is how to help organic growth from within. The majority of businesses in our country are, you know, owned by small business owners, and they make up the majority of the jobs. So this is really a way that the city government can offer a path to prosperity where they haven't had that before.
Now, if you own a small business, what do you need to know about attending one of these sessions?
You'll be able to spend about a half hour one-on-one with different agencies within the city, and they will give you guidance based upon your specific business and a site you may be looking at to kind of give you that clarity so that you'll know going forward exactly what it's going to take to get you from opening your doors to earning a living. So far, this has been kind of a pilot program, and the response has been overwhelming. So the city is looking to hopefully expand this program in the future and really have kind of a one shop that small business owners can go to that gives them a tremendous amount of resources.
Mike Field is co-founder of Modern Cities. That's at moderncities.com. I'm WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo.
For more on those help sessions with the City of Jacksonville, visit WJCTnews.org. And now downstate and from up high, there's meat falling from the sky. Now, that's weird, even by Florida standards, but that's what happened early one Saturday morning when a 15-pound bag of frozen pork landed on the roof of a Deerfield Beach house in South Florida. The address on the package? Jim Williams, who lived near Sarasota on Florida's Gulf Coast. Williams told police he'd bought some pigs at a fair earlier in the year and gave away some of the pork. How some of it ended up on a roof 170 miles away, he said, was anybody's guess.
People are just people, sometimes good, sometimes evil, a wondrous variety in all creation.
Boyd Tinsley is the violin player for the Dave Matthews Band, but he's got his own band called Crystal Garden. They came through Jacksonville for a performance and played on First Coast Connect. Let's give a listen. That's Crystal Garden with a new album out. Closing out Redux, I'm Michelle Corum. See you next week. And don't forget, we're on your favorite podcast app. Just hit subscribe.
People are just people and we'll keep learning. People are just people and we'll keep learning.